Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Always nice to spend a positive hour looking at how we can empower ourselves. Let's just take a moment before we get into the latest health and nutrition, always from peer-reviewed journals. Today, it's from the Journal of the American Geriatric Society, done by the American Geriatric Society Research, showing that the Mediterranean-style diets are linked to better brain function as you age. That's important, something we've been talking about. Many of you have been applying. And I just want to say, talk about many of you for a long period of time have been applying information as you see fit to meet your own individual needs. Our office has been inundated mainly by senior citizens, one yesterday from Brooklyn, 84 years old, been listening to this program for 45 years, came to a lot of lectures, was up in Harlem when I received a Lifetime Achievement Award for my work helping the people of Harlem, and came over and said that she'd overcome some conditions because of applying. I didn't counsel her, just the information for different conditions. And so she listens over the radio to our sister station where I've been for 45 years, WBAI, and she says, could you reconsider going away from BAI, because there are a lot of us who listen only through the radio. We don't have internet, and she said she didn't have internet. I thought about that, and I asked Sharon, how many people in our audience are just listening over the radio? Thousands. So for her, for Margarita, for Henrietta, for the people, Helene, who called in yesterday, I'm going to extend my program on WBAI, and in that regard, I asked them, would they be open for some direction that might help them? We have some outstanding local station board members who really strive to help the station. The station could benefit, by the way, by having someone who's a grant writer doing a free to help them get some grants to help the station. The station management assured me that they're doing everything humanly possible to get their premiums out to you in a timely manner. They don't have cash. And I've given them a lot of funds and a lot of gifts. In fact, I just agreed this morning to give them some more gifts to help their buddy system. And it was Linda, who is the, by the way, really a focused program director. And she's been in the trenches as a social activist on many issues for decades. And she sees the world for what it is, and she wants to help the station. So we're talking about making the buddy system even more beneficial by having some bonuses like videos or books on a monthly basis we could give people as a gift if they become a buddy. Anyhow, we're working on that. We're working on getting more input and helping to get some publicity for the station overall. So we're going to open a whole new day with new ideas. The station needs some fresh ideas, so we're going to do that. All right? So help our beloved BAI live another day, in spite of some people, even some station people, who are just toxic and negative. That's their right. You can be as negative as you want, but the majority of people, majority of the hosts and producers, the majority of the people on the local station board, they're very positive. They're very dedicated. So I honor you for giving your time, because these are all volunteers, to the station. Without you, the station wouldn't exist. Now, also today, I'm going to do a commentary from Chris Hedges I didn't have a chance to yesterday. We're going to go into great depth about everyone's confused. Should I get a vaccine or not? Should I get the test or not? Well, hold on. Didn't the CDC now say that the PCR test that everyone was required to take is no longer good because it's inaccurate, as much as 98% inaccurate? We told you that all along, remember? Well, everything we've been telling you is now being shown to be true. Wearing masks or not, and getting the vaccine and not being able to take your mask off, that doesn't make any sense. So Richard Gale and I have spent thousands and thousands of hours reading the peer-reviewed scientific literature. Everything we share comes from that literature. It's just that the mainstream media chooses not to look at that. They just listen to the talking points out of Washington, Anthony Fauci. So we're going to make everything better understandable in lay language today. What you do with it is up to you. I don't tell people to do something or not do something. I simply provide you with information, and my information is qualified. Also, we're going to hear from a doctor today who's one of the world's finest scientists and physicians. He has a background in immunology, pathology, virology, and he's going to give you some insights. I'm not going to play the whole tape. It's too long. I'll play about 10 minutes of it. Wow. If this was played on every television in the world, now you can agree or disagree with it, but he's open. He's retired. He spent 50 years in science medicine, and this brought him back. So he risks his reputation. And all these great minds are risking their reputation, but it's the orthodox taking on the orthodox. It's not the alternative. I haven't had anyone from the alternative perspective in a year and a half on to talk about COVID. So you're going to have that. Also, I believe that there's a relatively small group of people who have an agenda. I don't know what their ultimate agenda is, and I'm not going to presuppose. But I know it's toxic. It's about trying to control the American public fighting each other in all different ways, rather than looking at what we can all do to honor life, all life, to honor our ideals, to help those reach down with our hands and help those who are underserved or neglected or who have not had the opportunity to help them up so they have a chance with life. And we do that together. When we link arms, we are stronger than the Democrats or Republicans. We're stronger than corporate America. We're stronger than Wall Street. We're stronger than the CIA and the FBI. Those are not our friends. So why do the most media take all their talking points from them? So there's going to be a commentary today, authoritarians drunk on power. Is it time to repurpose the government? And I want to thank John W. Whitehead and Nasha Whitehead for their input. And if time permits, you can join us at the end to share your points of view. Oh, by the way, wow, a whistleblower in Great Britain talked about how they're putting a drug into nursing homes all over Great Britain, millions and millions of doses, and this is the drug that you use in assisted suicide. This is an end-of-life drug, and they're using it. And people inside the system are speaking out, the nurses, the doctors. Did you know about this? And yet their deaths are all being told that they're all COVID deaths. Wow. We're always going to share stuff you haven't heard. We do our homework, and we qualify that homework. We're also going to take issue with some of the statements made by Dr. Brown and others, Dr. Sherry Timpany, who we believe are being irresponsible in some of the statements they're making. But we always start with the latest on health and healing. You know, I know, we don't need the Journal of the American Geriatric Society to tell us that if we have more fresh food, whole grains, beans, nuts, pulses, potatoes, leafy vegetables, olive oil, coconut oil, walnuts, almonds, pistachios, pecans, and those who eat fish, but hopefully not factory farm fish and sustainable, like sardines, you're going to be healthier. Your heart's healthier, your circulation's healthier, you're less susceptible to all forms of cancer, your breast cancer, uterine cancer, prostate cancer. You're less susceptible to strokes. But that's what this just found. It was called the MIND, M-I-N-D, diet. And the MIND diet, needless to say, is a Mediterranean diet. And it includes 15 types of foods. 10 are considered brain healthy, meaning your green vegetables, your leafy vegetables. Other vegetables, the nuts, the berries, the beans, the whole grains, the seafood, the poultry, they have in here, the olive oil and wine. 5 are considered unhealthy. Red meats, butter, stick margarine, cheeses, pastries, sweets, fried and fast food. So they give you a clear delineation. Good on this side and unhealthy on that side. Now the key is that enough information for people to say, okay, I'm going to take what's on the left and I'm not going to eat what's on the right. I don't believe that that is enough. I believe that we've had outstanding individuals. Back in the 1930s, it was a man named Gaylord Houser. He was the nutritionist to the stars. I learned about him, met him, actually, through Gloria Swanson. I also Council, Greta Garbo and Hedy Lamarr, and a lot of notables. I mention their names only because they were not secret about it. Anyone else who didn't want any name mention, I have never mentioned. And I'm talking about thousands of people. I've counseled almost 60,000 plus people, probably 3,000, including members of a royal family. I never mention who they are, what they had, and I won't. I honor that privacy. But these people went public. Gloria Swanson used to come on my radio program, and we got the first program in Harlem of an organic lunch program in the school system. And I created the diet and educated the teachers and faculty, and she was the one who got the sponsorship so we could get it in there. And the kids loved it. We got good feedback from the parents. It takes a while. You can't just keep the idea that, here's good food, eat it and like it. It doesn't work that way. You have to be patient. You have to allow people to have taste. And, for example, I gave people, and we actually have a film of this. It's on GaryNall.com under the video bios. I brought a whole bunch of kids in to a autism and ADD-ADHD workshop I did. It was a six-month study group. And I laid out on a table one evening with their parents there all these junk foods, pizzas and hamburgers and hot dogs and milkshakes and colas, etc., everything. And then I laid out a table of all healthy foods. And you could see that they were healthy. And then I laid out a table of all prepared foods. And this is what it looks like when it's done. And then I told the, you know, asked the kids, go over and tell me which ones you like. And they all went to the junk food. Everyone went right over the table. In fact, there were so much people around it, they circled the whole table, and that was all gone. And I said, I told the parents, that's fine. And one woman who's a medical doctor, and her kid was there with ADHD, and she was angry. She says, what are you doing? This is insane. I didn't bring my kid here to eat junk food. I don't allow them to eat junk food. So I said, please be patient. So about a half hour later, I said, how y'all feeling? Okay. Any of you have jitteriness, headaches, anything? No. I said, all right. What if I told you everything you just ate was healthy? It was all vegan, gluten-free, all organic, and none of it was cooked. It all was dehydrated at 115 degrees, so it's a raw food. You ate a raw organic diet. It was just disguised to taste like and to look like, smell like, and have a mouthfeel of what it would be if you ate the same thing that was unhealthy. And there was laughter, and everybody thought, I said, but when I showed you all the raw ingredients that you were going to be eating, every one of those ingredients on that table you didn't even look at, that's what you're eating. And the table where the prepared food is, you didn't think that you would like it. Your thought was, I won't like it, so I'm not going to eat it. So I just wanted them to know that that ice cream you had, well, there's no sugar in it. It's stevia, and it has coconut, actual coconut, and coconut oil, and that gives it its smooth flavor, and some vanilla. And here's the vanilla bean, and here's how you get the taste out of a vanilla bean. And there's some almonds and the almond oil mixed with the vanilla gives you that unique flavor. So we spent a lot of time taking all their favorite foods, and the next week they came in with a list. What are your favorite junk foods? And then showing how to make those healthy. Also, there were supplements taken. At the end of 6 months, out of all the kids that were in that study, all but two completely reversed their ADD and ADHD symptoms. In fact, the woman who was the medical doctor, said, I brought one of my sons, I have three, they all used to bounce off the walls in the morning, and I didn't realize that I was giving him something that was causing that, the caffeine and the sugar and the colas they were drinking. She says, now, my one son who came, completely normal in his emotions, his physical activity. The other two now have seen the difference, and so they'll make the transition. It's not difficult. There's no magic, nothing unique. It's just looking at a problem and understanding that there has to be a different solution other than what's been tried, because what's been tried doesn't work. So that's why I've always advocated for my vegan friends, don't proselytize, don't push, don't coerce, don't be self-righteous, don't put anyone down who eats meat, because that's not going to help them feel good about themselves, and it's not going to help you to have a convert. Just let people understand how things can be done, be an example of someone who is open, flexible, and is extremely patient. Because people will change generally when there's a crisis. Don't we mostly change when there's a crisis? Now, some people are motivated. Some people have a different energy. And these different energy people, they don't need everything incrementally. They'll do it all at once. These are quantum living, quantum thinking, quantum action people. But I'm just giving this as an example. If we know that we can prevent heart disease and cancers and help our brains stay younger longer, have our muscles be stronger, have more human growth hormone naturally produced, wouldn't it be common sense to do it? And the answer is yes, but then you're not using in the equation all the conditioning, all of the education that they've got, which is misguided, and all the advertising, which is purely propaganda. At what point does a person no longer think about whether or not something is healthy and good for them? They want it. They want it now. They want the taste, the smell, the mouthfeel, and the feeling afterwards. So we've got to pull back and look at the bigger picture of how we're going to change to help each other. From the North American Menopause Society, they published a study in menopause, and it shows that dancing improves cholesterol levels and physical fitness and self-image and self-esteem in postmenopausal women. Simply stated, women who often struggle managing their weight and other health factors, such as high cholesterol, once they transition through menopause, that happens. Boy, you gain weight, though you haven't been overeating. Your hormones change. Eyebrows begin to thin. Hair begins to thin. Becomes no longer that rich, full body look, but it's kind of dry and breaks easy. And I know one woman who says, how long can you go without shampooing? I said, why? She said, if I shampoo more than once a week, I just shampoo. I finish and I go over to the clog and the screen like a handful of hair is there. And then when I go to dry my hair, my brush is full of hair. She said, I'm afraid to shampoo and I'm afraid. Well, fortunately, I 3 months later, I said, I have an anti-aging hair study coming up. It's going to last a year. We're meeting every week, and let's see if we can't help. Wow, you talk about a change. There were so many people who showed up, 5,000 people showed up, and we had doctors, nurses there, not because there was anything they needed, but I wanted them to look at the scalp. If you dyed your hair, you couldn't get in because we wouldn't know whether or not the study helped recolor your hair. And so they examined everyone's scalp. This went on for 5 hours. Finally, we had 1,500 people who were selected, who met the criteria, balding, thinning, and graying. The oldest was an 85-year-old gentleman who was totally bald. And at the end of a year, when we looked at the final results, we didn't have any success. We had a 5% success, which is not significant. I was puzzled by that. But, you know, I said, okay, we tried, and not everything works. All right? So 3 months later, I'm walking down Broadway, and a guy stops me. And a little short guy. And he says, Gary. I said, yes. He says, hey, remember me? I was in your study. I said, I'm sorry, I don't remember the face. There were 1,500 people. We were having 3 classes a night. Everybody could fill in the auditorium. And he said, look at this. And he takes off a little beret. And I see he's got, looks like what a crew cut. All right? Short hair. But all over his head. He says, I was totally bald. And he said, my hair's coming back in the last 3 months. I said, well, didn't it come back during? No, nothing came back during the study. I said, why is that? He said, well, you want to know the truth? He said, all of us afterwards in the group I was with, we'd all go over to this Chinese restaurant, and there must have been 100 of us. We'd eat there, none of it healthy. And we were coming to socialize. We were coming, you know, for just information, but we weren't coming to actualize. And I thought, my goodness. So I ran back home, and I said, call everyone that you can reach out to in the study and see, did they actually do the protocol? I assumed that they would. Who would not do a protocol if you're sacrificing coming every week for a year? That's a lot of effort, just getting there and sitting. 95% of the people did not do the protocols. Maybe one little thing in the protocol. But a protocol has to be complete if you're going to get the results. Can't just do one or two things. That's why now I do my protocols on campus where I'm there with people so I see what they eat and the supplements they take, the exercise they do, the meditation they do. So I can't cheat. So I reconvened and we did it again. This way you had to prove each week that you were on the protocol, had to turn in journals every week, and sure enough, we had a 90% success rate at the end of the year. And the man who was 85, that man had a full head of hair, all brown, not dyed, natural color. A woman, she had no eyebrows. Her eyebrows were now all in. Her hair was thick. It was magnificent, but also the skin improved. I wasn't even measuring the skin. What I found was anything that will help the hair also helps the skin. Anyhow, the idea was there were an awful lot of postmenopausal women in that study. So later when I did the postmenopausal study for 500 women every week for a year, phenomenal results. I used the hair protocol and we had all this improvement. So it is not automatic that you're going to lose your hair and your skin's going to get saggy and crepey, and you're going to lose your muscle mass and you're going to have fatigue and vaginal dryness. It doesn't have to be that way. But you can't change that just doing things incrementally. Do it holistically. Do it all. But adding dancing to that now is one more thing that you can do. And one other thing, this is from Massachusetts General Hospital for Children. They found that vitamin D has a strong anti-tumor necrosis factor alpha therapy and especially good with children with inflammatory bowel disease. So that's the latest. So vitamin D helps with immune modulation and both the innate and adaptive immune systems. And if you have a deficiency, which an awful lot of children do, that causes a progression of inflammatory bowel disease in those that are susceptible. But the more vitamin D you have, the less inflammation you have also. So one more reason to see that our children are given that. And finally, and this is to those people out there who always seem to look at the negative side of any argument or issue. They're always kind of in a negative, toxic mindset. They're very good at being critical of people, but they're not good at helping. They're good at condemning, but not going in to a situation to see if you can't make it better. What they're lacking is, at one level, is empathy. So the University of Toronto did a study. It was published in the peer-reviewed journal Psychological Science. And it explored empathy in everyday life. What'd they find? Well, the researchers at the University of Toronto, after studying our capacity for empathy or our ability to sense and understand someone else's emotions, and they came away with some different insights. And it's important, since empathy is fundamental to maintaining meaningful and healthy relationships, it makes it a big part of our daily lives. Have you ever seen people that no matter what they're suffering from, they don't share that? They ask you how you're doing with a smile. They care about other people. These are the people that will make sure that their pets are really attended to, but their friends are also, and family members as well. And so empathy is a very important part. How can you, for example, see any of the posters that are around or the stories about the Yemen crisis where we have 500,000 children starving to death, could possibly die this year. And you see that one picture, it's a iconic picture of a little kid, I'm guessing 4 or 5 years old, sitting with a little pot belly showing malnutrition, little tiny little limbs, and right behind him is a buzzard just waiting for the kid to die. Wow. You can't see that if you're a person of empathy without being touched. But should we be reminded, do we have to have something that stimulates us to say, well, as tough as life might be for some of you, it doesn't begin to be compared to how tough it is for those kids in Yemen or in Haiti or in other places where we will spend billions of dollars, but not to feed, not to get them into clinics, not to get them water systems working, not to get them agriculture and seeds so they can eat. No, for bombs. This administration, the last administration, the administration before that, all. It's about war, not saving lives here or abroad. And that's why I said empathy is so important to carry it with you every day, because then you're not seeing something based upon the color of a person's skin or their religious beliefs or their cultural differences or their age or sexual preference. You're not seeing that. Those are merely unique parts of their identity that they bring into something, and that's what multiculturalism is. You're seeing them as a sacred soul, and any sacred soul can always find the synergy of harmonizing a higher vibrational level when you share the best that you are with another person without separating. And the establishment doesn't want that. They don't want us loving each other. They don't want us honoring each other. They want us fighting each other. And isn't it time now, since they're not even disguising it, that we say, no matter what propaganda the New York Times or CNN or Fox or anyone else gives us, we're not buying it. We believe in the goodness of people. We believe there's an abundance of love, creative minds, and solutions that we can work on. Just my thoughts. I'd like to hear yours. 888-888-874-4888 is our talkback number. 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear what you think. Now, we're going to go to a break. But before we go to a break, I just want to add one more thing on to this, because I'm very concerned. When I said a year ago that as bad as COVID is, as many lives as it's taken, as much of a crisis it's created, the worst is still to come. Now the worst is coming. Now they're talking not just about the idea, but mandating the vaccines. And then the cards that you have to show that you're vaccinated. And then the identity of everything in your medical background being on those cards and everything else. So the convenience of having a card, oh, I can get on a plane, I can go to this country. And that's the carrot that they're offering. Oh, now you can fly to this country if you've had your double vaccines and we have all your identity information and you can prove it. This is a matter of social control, and that I'm against. Isn't it time that we challenged the type of non-scientific, non-humanistic, non-common sense demands the government is placing upon us? For years now, we've suffered the injustices, the cruelties, the corruption and abuse of an entrenched government bureaucracy that has no regard for either the Constitution or your rights as an individual. The sanctity of your body. Now it's not even the sanctity of your body. They're demanding you don't get vaccinated, you don't work, you don't go to school. And yet that's illegal, unconstitutional. They don't care. It's now their body to do with what they want. You understand what happens once you give them permission to have control over what you can do, where you can travel, where you can go into a restaurant or a theater or not. By governments, I'm not referring to the highly partisan two-party bureaucracy of the Republicans and Democrats, which are completely compromised. Rather, I'm referring to government with the capital G, the entrenched deep state that is affected by elections, unaffected by elections or unaltered by populist movements, and has set itself beyond the reach of the law. But maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe all of the 59 countries that I know of that have been changed, adversely affected, because we meaning American corporate agenda, didn't like the fact that certain countries wouldn't allow their corporations to pollute and adulterate the environment or to exploit their labor. So we sent in the jackals. They did the work. Have you ever heard of a single person being held responsible for all the death and destruction and torture? No. How about the FBI? No. No. Justice Department? No. So then none of these people are held accountable. In fact, they're brought on television to talk about what is right and wrong, and yet nothing is right and everything is wrong with them. We have lingered too long in this strange twilight zone where ego trumps justice, propaganda perverts truth, and imperial presidents empowered to indulge their authoritarian tendencies by legalistic courts, corrupt legislatures, and a disinterested, distracted populace rule by fiat rather than the rule of law. The COVID-19 pandemic has provided the government with the perfect excuse to lay claim to a long laundry list of terrifying lockdowns powers at both the federal and state level that override the Constitution and the ability to suspend the Constitution, indefinitely detain American citizens, bypass the courts, quarantine whole communities or segments of the population, override the First Amendment by outlawing religious gatherings and assemblies for more than a few people, but shut down entire industries and manipulate the economy, muzzle everyone who dissents, reshape financial markets, create a digital currency, and thus further restrict the use of cash, determine who should live or who should die, and impose health mandates on large segments of the population. This is the crisis that we face, and it tends to bring out the authoritarian tendencies in governments. That's no surprise. You all know power corrupts, and you know, Lord Ecton, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Where we find ourselves now is in the unenviable position of needing to rein in all three branches of government, the executive, the judicial, and legislative, that have exceeded their authority and grown drunk on power. This is exactly the kind of concentrated, absolute power the founders attempted to guard against by establishing the system of checks and balances. We have no checks and balances now. Nope, we do not. We have unadulterated power in almost no branch of government. We have fully adulterated power in every branch of government, and that is a menace to our freedom. There's no point debating which political party would be more dangerous with these powers, and which political party controls the media with these powers, and which media controls the information and so-called truths that we're supposed to abide by this power. Because I can drive a truck through every single one of the news media in this country and show you the fallacies that these people are too smart, too well-educated, too well-resourced not to have found the truth, but they've chosen not to provide us with the truth. The fact that any individual or branch of government of any political persuasion is empowered to act like a dictator is danger enough, so that what we can do is wrest back control over a runaway government and an imperial presidency. Will it be easy? Not at all. Are we the unwitting victims of a system so corrupt that those who stand up for the rule of law and aspire to transparency in government are the minority? I don't believe so. I believe that when you look at how many people are registered Democrats and Republicans, set them aside and look at how many are independent who once were Republican or Democrat but then realized how corrupt those had become, and we have not given voice to the independent people in our society as if they're invisible and don't count. They do count. And now is the time that we take a look at the elite class of individuals who are completely out of touch with the travails of the average American. They've never been to Appalachia. They've never been into a coal mine town. They've never been where I grew up. They've never been on an Indian reservation and see what it's like today. They have never been in the ghettos that were never ghettos historically but now are, because of politicians' need to make promises to get reelected, and they get the cash from the lobbyists that now factories that have been sustaining labor, which then sustain quality of life, are now shipped offshore. Decades of this has left America gutted. So, these are the people we're supposed to trust? I think not. So I believe that we are being made to suffer countless abuses by the hands of people who are completely living in bubbles. And that's unfortunate. So we have invasive surveillance, marauding SWAT teams, an overwhelming government arsenal of assault vehicles and firepower, and a barrage of laws that criminalize everyday behavior, from vegetable gardening to lemonade stands. We've allowed this to get way out of hand. Just my thoughts. We need to start realizing if we don't push back, we won't be able to push back. We're going to take a break, come back, and we're going to take on the latest on making everything that seems confusing about COVID and its dictates and who's protected, who's not, should you wear a mask or not. We're going to go through each one of these to try to make some sense out of it. Please stay with us. I'm Gary Nau. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world for joining us. Joining us now is Richard Gale. And Richard and I have gone through the different areas of misinformation, patently provable misinformation, peer-reviewed journal shown misinformation, but media supported no matter what, the government supported no matter what, Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates supported no matter what. So how is it that the people are saying they're doing something in the name of science, everything they're telling us is anti-science? Richard Gale, nice to have you with us. Tell us step by step, go through them, and let's see if we can make sense of all this.
Okay. I think I'd like to start just with something that we were discussing before, and just very briefly, is that what I think we're witnessing right now is a lot of confusion within and between the federal health agencies. And just for one really good example, and this goes to some of the misinformation we're being told, that just very recently there was Walensky, the new head of the CDC, Biden's appointment, told the Senate committee that the data is showing that fully vaccinated individuals can't pass the COVID to other people. And she quoted that it's not just in the clinical trials, but it's also in real world data. And then what we discover is that I saw the report today. It may have been reported, though, actually officially yesterday, that now the CDC has come out and stated the fully vaccinated people are contagious and spread the Delta variant. So we're just seeing these mixed messages that just indicates to me that our federal officials, in trying to keep a particular agenda going, which is to push the vaccines, push the novel, expensive, innovative drugs like remdesivir, that their narrative is just breaking down. It's getting increasingly confused. Recently Fauci came on and said that, that we're going to have to be wearing masks, correct? Well, Walensky had come on earlier and said, no, we don't need to be, if you're vaccinated, you don't need to be wearing masks. And the Surgeon General just comes on the news and said, it contradicts the CDC, saying local mask mandates for the vaccinated make sense. So even the agencies themselves, there's, in my opinion, a real communication breakdown. We were being told that, as I said, that the vaccines don't shed. Now we're discovering that the vaccine immunity is short. Emory University just came out and said that people who have recovered from the COVID retain much broader and effective long-term immunity to disease, according to this new study that they published. So even how long these vaccines are good for, again, mixed messages. Fauci said at first it was, I think, back in last November it would be a year. Now he's saying, we're going to have to get boosters in 6 months. And the rest of the data, especially coming out of Israel, is showing that these vaccines aren't going to be doing anything for us whatsoever. So it's now, we were told before, and the media was telling us that the vaccines were 95% effective. Israel's study has just shown that, and this is from Israel's health ministry, and I'll always put much more reliance on Israel's science than I would our own, because they have brilliant scientists in Israel. Nobody can argue against that. And they're saying it's 39%. And I was just shared with you, Gary, earlier today, there was a chart that came from the Israel Ministry of Health. And when you look at the percent of now the new cases of the new cases of COVID in Israel, you're looking at among 30-39 year olds, 80% of the cases are vaccinated. 40-49, 84%. 60-69, 89%. So we're looking at the percent of the population that is coming down with the new cases of COVID. We're looking at an average of about 85 to 90% are vaccinated. So that should warn us. Now, granted that the Israeli population is much more vaccinated than America is and other countries. They're at the top right now. So there's so many different issues we could go through.
Richard, let's just zip through these issues, okay? We got to go through them quicker because I've got a lot of people lined up. Please go through them 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, the number of deaths that were reported, you know, we've seen that there's a Johns Hopkins study that completely debunked the number of deaths that were being reported. We've covered the PCR and all the problems with the PCR in the past. And we've seen now the shifting where at first they were doing it a high cycle, and then the CDC changed it to a much lower cycle once the vaccines were rolled out in order to be able to show that the vaccine was effective. And now more recently, they just said the PCR, don't even use the PCR anymore. So, you know, they were able to get their goal. They reached their goal to be able to get the vaccines rolling. We've seen now that the number of false positives that we've discussed that before. But even okay, but let, in terms of
hold on, Richard, hold on. Let me just put this in perspective so people understand how important this is. We have done at least 20 broadcasts where we have gone into depth about the false notion that the PCR could accurately predict whether or not you had an active live virus in your body. That is not possible. It doesn't do that. And who says, watch the hour and 52-minute interview I did with the developer of it, Dr. Curry Mullis. Go to GaryNoll.com. It's there. And it's been shared millions of times all over the world. The PCR test at the amplifications that they're using, 35, 40, 45, are just showing junk, dead old debris in the cell, non-infective. But then suddenly, if you get a positive, and you will, then you're called a COVID case. But a case should be someone who is actively showing symptoms or actively sick and therefore needs treatment and isolation. No, it's just a regular person. And what if you've had COVID a year ago and you're completely healthy now, and now you have a robust immune system, they still want to vaccinate you. Where's the science showing that that will benefit you? There is no science. None. And what if they give you a vaccine after you've been vaccinated, after you've already overcome the virus? Will that compromise your immune system? Yes, there's information showing that. So they're wanting to vaccinate people who've already gotten COVID and are healthy. There's no basis for that in the COVID science. And now they want to say that all those people, those hundreds of millions of Americans who got the PCR test, oh, that's all garbage science. But don't look back. We made this huge mistake, huge mistake. Now let's just go forward with a new test. No. That's a crime against humanity. They should be held accountable because we sent them, everyone sent them, who's one of the legitimate scientists, proof that that test was not accurate, not at that threshold. And they knew that because the people who were vaccinated then came back and got tested again, but at 26 repetitions of cycles, where before it was 45. Well, 26, you won't show that you're infected. I see. So they test you twice in order to get you vaccinated, to make you fear for your life, and then after you've been vaccinated, oh, you're okay now. They played everyone. It's bad science, it's bad public health, and they knew what they were doing. This is not real science. This is political and economic science. Just take a few more there, Richard.
Yeah, well, just what we're being told about what we're not being told about the adverse effects. There are some things they have no choice because it reaches the news, so they have to backtrack and then say, oh, yes, there's the blood clotting, you know, with some or the anaphylaxis shock with the J&J. But again, just to show the internal confusion, when Walensky was on one of the news networks, she was saying the CDC recommends the pregnant women, you know, she received the COVID vaccine. But then I just checked, you go to the CDC website, and it says does not recommend that pregnant people receive the vaccine. And instead, it actually says that they can get the vaccine, but it makes very clearly there's limited data on anything concerning pregnant people with the vaccines. So it's just, again, it's all this internal conflict. And now Fauci before was stating, you know, we have to get, it's possible to reach herd immunity reasonably quickly, in his words, if enough Americans take the vaccine. And now what we're seeing is that the majority of people that are keeping the pandemic going happen to be the vaccinated who are coming down with the virus. So that's another one. And the real dangerous thing has been this emergency use authorization. This is something that's got to go because it allowed the companies to skip over doing any real safety trials, and particularly animal trials, and just jump right to using the guinea pigs, the lab rats, as being humans. And this, to me, this is something we've got to get rid of, this emergency use. It just has it's been a disaster.
Now, a couple more things. Last night, the same woman who heads the CDC, a former Harvard professor, stated that children should be vaccinated, that more children ended up getting COVID than the influenza, the flu, which is not true. In fact, where are the CDC and Canada and the United Kingdoms? Where are their vaccine death statistics? Because since COVID occurred, they've stopped using them. And suddenly, someone dying of pneumonia is listed as COVID. So we looked at all the studies that show how susceptible is a child of dying without comorbidities from COVID? And the answer is almost it's negligible. Therefore, more children will die from the COVID vaccine or have side effects. And yet, this is the woman who says this is the science, and she doesn't even know the science. This person is clueless, unfortunately, and she's the most powerful person at the CDC. She heads it. But we've seen this before with Judy Gerbening and others telling us, you know, the vaccines are safe and effective when her own organization was engaged in criminal behavior by suppressing the negative effects of the MMR vaccine on African-American young children, young males 36 months and younger, with a 324% increase in autism after taking the MMR vaccine. They knew it, they hid it, and no one has held them accountable. That same organization is now telling us, oh, vaccinate your children, and yet children are not susceptible. Now, then they're saying, well, get the vaccine. But now the latest study shows the vaccines only last, the immune factor protection lasts maybe 2 to 3 months, where natural immunity lasts much, much, much longer, and you're less likely to get sick and less likely, if you are re-exposed, to come down with it. And now they want to have boosters, one booster after another. Once they start this, you realize where this is going. They want to have it to where an entire population is mandated to take a vaccine, and based upon boosters and how short the immunity is, maybe every 3 months. So 4 times a year, you'd be getting a vaccine. Now, what do you think would be the impact if already we have, worldwide, tens of thousands of dead confirmed, and millions upon millions injured, many permanently injured, and not a single criticism from anyone in the media. Now, what does that tell you that we have to tell you the bad news about vaccines? We show you the death statistic, their statistics, not ours, and how many are permanently damaged, even videos of people who, one woman, 22 years old, just had her legs amputated after getting the vaccine. They've never seen these kind of reactions in people. They don't know how to handle them. I've got a clip I'm going to play tomorrow about a nurse saying we get patients coming in with conditions and symptoms we've never seen in our entire careers. We don't know how to handle these. That's all from the vaccines. And yet, when was the last time there was a column in the New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, where you had all this information, accurate information, brought on, and someone say, with all this death and destruction, within just a little over 6 months, shouldn't we maybe put a moratorium on this? And the answer is no. No bad news. So Facebook, Twitter, Google, Wikipedia, condemn anybody and bar any information that shows you the truth about the destruction of the vaccines. And now they're going after children? And so people are saying no. That's their right. And also remember, they lied about the deaths and the age of the deaths, the people, and said it was all COVID, and turned out those studies showed it wasn't. So it's important that we get the truth so you can make informed choices. Richard, hang on. Let's say hello to Kathy from the Bronx. Hi, Kathy, your turn. Do we have Kathy on? No? Okay, let's say hello to Ellis from New Jersey. Ellis, your turn.
Yes, thank you, Gary. Can you tell me, for those folks who have been forced to take the vaccine, what would you suggest, what kind of protocol or regimen that they should go on to counteract any possible side effects?
Okay, Ellis, you're not the first person to ask that question to me. There is right now, with these vaccines, there is no proven therapy that I'm aware of that can undo the damage. Because remember, this is causing your cells, your epithelium, to create spike proteins. And then the antibodies in your body are then attacking those spike proteins, creating antibodies. But then it's not taking in consideration what happens when you can't turn that off and you may have an autoimmune condition. So your body is normally attacking itself, like with rheumatoid arthritis or lupus. Then you can end up having a person get in serious trouble because they now have a flame going on in their body and inflammatory cytokines, and they have these storms, the cytokine storms, and that can literally kill a person. In the lungs, it does kill you. In the heart, it does kill you. In the brain, it can kill you. So this is what we have going on. So the people have not been given the real lessons, the biology lessons. Well, tomorrow we're going to give you a biology lesson by one of the world's leading pathologists, virologists, and a person experiencing this. He has a chart, so you won't want to miss that. Step by step, very methodical, what it does inside your body. Because if you knew what it did, you may have a question about getting this. So what I'm doing now is I'm looking at the entire world literature to say, is there anything that we can do inside the body of someone who's been vaccinated? And the good news is that some of the 40 different approaches do have merit. There's no studies. There's not even clinical experience. But I'm looking at it starting as a scientist. I'm starting at the basic level, then taking it from the basics to the applied, like a homeopathic zeolite. What will that do when you're dealing with person's immune response? So I'm hopeful within a couple of weeks to have a post-vaccine protocol for those who want to try to minimize the damage that could be done. And I will share that with everyone in a program. All right, Ellis? In the short term, though, there's nothing that I'm aware of. It's unlike any of the other vaccines. And I've helped a lot of people who've had the normal vaccines and adverse effects help their body regain some homeostasis balance. Let's say hello to Don from New Jersey. Hi, Don. You're on the air. Do we have Don? No? Kathy, we have Kathy from the Bronx now. Hi, Kathy.
Can you hear
Your turn. I can hear you now, yes.
Okay, perfect. I'd like to know, are there two cases of the vaccinated evidence of antibody dependence enhancement? If so, what does it mean to continue injecting more of the population? And then my second question is, if the PCR tests are no longer going to be used, what will take its place? And do you think it will be a legitimate tool or a faulty one to amplify infections more than they actually are?
Both very good questions. Thank you, Kathy. I'm going to answer it. Richard Gell will answer one. I'll answer the other. I'll start with the shedding notion. Yes, it was a hypothesis about 6 months ago. And there was a Danish doctor, and by the way, his whole life in science, nearly 40 years, was in vaccine research and development and immunology. And he said in an interview very calmly that he believed at that point, it was a hypothesis, that there could be shedding. And by the way, other vaccines are known to shed, like the flu vaccine, nasal flu vaccine sheds. And therefore, we weren't telling people, oh, go get your flu shot. People got their flu shot thinking they were safe going back into their home or offices and then shedding that through their saliva, through their nasal drippings, through coughs and sneezes, and then putting that on in surface areas or airborne in the air. And that meant people could spread that all over the place. So in this case, he was attacked immediately. And there was one person in particular attacked him, and she came on my program and then hung up. I'm not going to get into that. She attacked this person, and it turns out he was correct. But he also mentioned about what happens when our immune system goes awry because it's being overstimulated. And this is all brand new because we haven't done this RNA vaccine in the past. So can you shed it? Yes. That means that a vaccinated person can actually infect a non-vaccinated person. And therefore, we're saying that the unvaccinated, every time in the New York Times, even today, front page, the deniers and the resistors, as if somehow there's something wrong with them. They don't understand science or public health. They're just being selfish. And all this, how can we motivate them? How can we cajole them? How can we threaten them into being vaccinated? And it turns out that those individuals are actually on the right side of this issue. And they're building up their immune system in other ways. And many of them have already gotten COVID. So why would you then insist someone who's got COVID get the vaccine? That is simply non-scientific. But can you adversely affect the immune system once you've had the vaccine or other people in your immediate environment? Richard, do you want to take it from there?
Yeah, just concerning the antibody dependent enhancement, because you asked about that. And so what that really means is that it used to be called immune enhancement or disease enhancement. So that's like a phenomenon in which the virus is bonding to suboptimal antibodies. And when those antibodies are suboptimal, it kind of enhances, it increases the ability of the, of the virus to enter into the host cells. And then, once it's attached and it enters the host cell, then it can replicate. Okay. So, and because of the conditions that the vaccine create in the body, it can also, it's a little bit almost like, when you have bacterial infection and you take an antibiotic, but you feel better and you stop taking the antibiotic, but the virus is still kind of there dormant there could be still some virus there, but now that virus has had the ability to build up a resistance. Right. So, with a virus, what it will do, its resistance would be mutating into a new strain. So that's why there's the thought now that these, like the Delta virus and the South African one, may have been through this antibody dependent enhancement, have risen as mutations in vaccinated people. So the vaccinated people will be creating the, and we saw that this was also like with pertussis. Now there's this new strain of pertussis the vaccine's no good for, and the scientists in Australia are assuming we've over vaccinated people, and therefore the similar to a bacterial resistance, that now there's, you have, you're getting this vaccine resistance within viruses. So I hope that answered that question.
Kathy, does that give you better insight?
Yes. And then for the PCR test, what would they use in place of it?
We see four different labs around the United States, around the world, that are using a more specific antibody, your body's own antibody, and to that particular strain. And they're matching the strain to the antibody, so you'll get a more realistic objective. This is not a PCR test. And it is more of a traditional antibody response test. And that just has been suppressed completely because everything was the PCR. They weren't allowing any competition. It was one test. Everybody's got to take it. Now we're seeing the limitations and the weaknesses of that PCR test. And they've just said, we're not going to do it anymore. That's the CDC. Isn't it amazing? Everybody's got to take it. And if you challenge it, you're a nut job and a quack. And now don't anyone take it because we're changing. And we're not allowed to ask questions. We're not allowed to challenge. We're not allowed to offer different opinion. So probably within the next month, you'll see that. And we will look at the science from the actual laboratories. We'll look at the peer-reviewed literature. We'll look at the studies they've done to confirm how accurate it is. And then I will share that with you and everyone else in the audience, Kathy. All right? Good to speak with you. Thank you for two very intelligent questions. We're out of time, everyone. I want to thank all of you for listening, and we'll look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.